recycled. That's a universal law. So his death and his birth was already set up by the karma of the students that he attracted to him. So he dying on the cross with no death, in the sense of his own failure, his dying on the cross with the workers, the failure of his disciples who were unable to handle their own problems in their own fine cycle and fine sequence, not having the devotion or the love for God or the capacity to stick with truth. Man goes up and down, man fluctuates. Man makes a pledge, embraces a pledge, then starts all over again or he casts out. A realized master understands all the ins and outs of our behavior. And he will take on the responsibility of sacrificing his life for that student. A mother sacrifices her life for a child. If the baby is sick, she sits up all night. She may be tired next morning, pooped out. But she spends all night trying to worry about the child. Realize many things. She realizes what the unrealized man won't realize. And he takes on that responsibility and moves in that frame of reference for that man's benefit or the world's benefit.
I didn't know you were asking such a profound question.
Oh, yes, I did.
I didn't know I was
going to
get such a profound answer.
I'm going to pass this around. If anyone wants to be on the line, I'll put the name in there first, too.
What's the technique for that?
Well, thine eyes is closed. This is the Lord's statement. Lend thine eyes. When you say lend thy eyes, it says lend thine eyes are single. That means center. Turn it in. The whole body, this chemical structure, this atomic structure, is full of light. It took Einstein to convince us today that energy is equal to the mass times the velocity of light here. You've got more atomic energy in your 150 pounds or 180 pounds walking around than any atomic bomb that you can hit. Now Jesus is saying it in a very fundamental way. When your eyes are singled or centered, this whole body is full of light. But he goes on to tell you something about yourself which you don't realize. Your light is shining in the darkness. That means that light is there. You don't make it up. You can't imagine it. You can't hallucinate about it. It's already there, shining in the darkness, and the darkness is your desire nature. Your desire nature which tends to pull you out into the environment seeking enjoyment by getting trapped with wrong attitudes. But that darkness is there. That's the darkness in you, your desire nature. And the light is shining in it already. And the darkness comprehends it not. Your desire nature cannot comprehend why light should be in your body. If you look on your head, you'll see light. If you get a blow on your head, you'll see light. But your own desire nature, your own mental darkness, cannot comprehend or understand why that light is there.
I thought the derivation of the word desire was being of the fire, of the fire.
It also means to produce two. It's both. One is king, fire is king, and fire is to reproduce itself. A fire of horse. Horses must fire of male. So you see, the same word has two meanings. It means authority or kingship, and it means reproduction. Now, it's a dualistic principle, that's why it's called the most subtle function in the human body, it's called a snake. That's the symbol for desire. The subtlest function of the human body, or the subtlest creature in creation is a snake, serpent. These symbols are used to represent the word desire. Now, you have a craving to do something outward, or you have a craving to go inward, either way. The craving to go out would be like a 10 foolish virgin who burned up all their energy. The craving go in is like the 10 white virgins who trim their lamps. Or 5 virgins, they trim their 5. This is actually your 5 senses, outward or inward. The wise function of your 5 senses by craving is to look in. The foolish function of your 5 senses is to sit them out, constantly hanging on there. And you have the energy going out all the time in your ego. That's energy going out all the time. Now, what you're trying to get back inside here is the darkness don't understand, the desire energy doesn't understand where this atomic energy is in your body. But Master Jesus has gone to one step further to master this principle. He said, but let your light so shine before men, he didn't say before donkeys or horses or cows or rocks or trees. He said, let your light so shine before men that they may see the good work and glorify the Father which is in thee. Now, if you see the light that is truly within your mechanism and you become identified with it, everything around you suddenly falls into place and you are from then on moving in a different vibratory rate with your nature. You're at the right place at the right time for the right experience. And the experience is neither good or bad, just the opportunity to test your love. And from then on you live what is known as the miraculous life of photophilic existence. Can you live such a life, photophilic existence? Ask yourself. You understand the principle of photophilic?
Right,
photo finish. You ever have photo finish?
Of course, right.
Your whole life is a race between birth and death, and you're making it by photo finish. So you begin to live what is called photo finish. Every stress, every insecurity comes challenging you. Yet, with a fine margin, you make it before it crashes in on you. You seem to be sharing what they call a luck of the Irish or something. You have to live what is called a celestial charm life. Even Jesus made it photo finish. They hung him on the cross only to walk away from the gate. That's photo finish. I'm talking of the photo finish principle. This is a principle, isn't it? Where everything seems very destructive and at the critical moment when it should destroy you, you come out in a different frame of reference.
And you're talking about Kriya Yoga more or less, right?
Kriya Yoga.
And you mentioned Paramahansa Yoga now.
Paramahansa, yeah, it's pretty good for
Paramahansa Yoga.
Right. He, as I understand it, he draws the energy in. Cuts off the tensions and so
on. Your Roy Eugene Davis, in three books, I had to pick all that out and put it together, and that's and I was initiated in Kriya Yoga, and that's what you do. So
I'll be informed. The word Kriya only means scientific, and the word yoga means union. So you see, where is the information now? The word Kriya only means scientific. That's what the word means, scientific. And yoga means union.
Who goes with that? And the cause and effect approach.
It has nothing to do with that.
Well, what does it have to do with it?
God is sound. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. There is no other scripture in the world that says that God is not sound. Every scripture in the world says God is sound. They don't say light. This song made light. God made light. He is not light.
They have a technique for that. You direct the attention back there and you get that own sound.
But God is sound. Meaning life is sound. Life is sound itself. The sonic vibration. And this sonic vibration is your physical body in a crystallized form. That is what this whole thing is all about. And you don't have to go to a place to find it or do anything. You just have to listen to it. That's what I just told you, the technique. Sit down and close your eyes and listen. It's that simple, that simple. But that's very hard to do. Learn to watch inside and deactivate your brain. Is there a point in space that attention will be? Where are you living now? Are you living in tomorrow or yesterday? Are you living in now?
Yeah.
All right, where will attention be?
Now. Yeah.
All right, so what do you want to focus on?
I'm focusing outside right now.
What is outside and what is inside? Are you not living in the now?
My frame of reference.
So that is a thematic problem with you. It's not a biological realization of you. You have a thematic problem with your understanding of yourself. Yet a biological understanding, then you see there is no now outside or now inside. Now is now. And there is no attention out there or in there. Attention is here. It's a biological experience, not a psychological experience. God is not a psychological thing. God is a biological process. Highly biological, very, very biological. So biological or physiological that we don't even recognize it. God is being it already. The substance. Pure being. It's not a psychological condition. It is a physiological experience. And it has to happen in now and in here. So it's not something we can just imagine and use words. We have to experience it. But the only way we can thoroughly convince of the experience is that we must get. Otherwise we're not thoroughly convinced. And the journey of the experience begins from your soul. And then to the top of your head. The art of making this whole body go into what is called conscious rhythm artist. Daily, not once in your life, every 24 hours you must experience this phenomenon. Numbness and no sensation in the body. But most people are unconscious. This is a conscious state we're talking about, that you are conscious of it. That you have performed it. Jesus put it simple. No man take my life from me. I have the power to lay down and pick it up. That means he was consciously involved in shutting down or turning down the volume of the life impulse in those cells by his own volition. He was deactivating the brain. Pure fundamental physics, which is metaphysics. Metaphysics only means out of the range of personal experience without the microscope or the telescope. Once you get the microscope, you can see this. Yeah? Physics out of the range of your five senses, but within the range of the microscope. It's in the range of the microscope, but not within the range of your five senses. You can't look at your hand and see the bone. And yet, metaphysically, which is outside of the range of physics, the five senses, is physics because an X-ray will allow you to see the bone. That's why they call it metaphysics, beyond the sensory range of optical vision. So, that is what metaphysics means. They don't mean some nebulous thing. Most of us got different contact with ideas of what the truth is. Truth is truth. It will make you free. If you look at it objectively and don't try to build around it. The X-ray machine shows you the bone, but it's in the range of physics. Yet your eyes don't see the bone. Yet the clairvoyant vision is an accelerated vision that can see the bone. It's the same vision, only in a different rate of acceleration. So all these things are classified as metaphysics. Simply meaning beyond the physical limitation of observation. But within the range of the microscope, the X-ray, and the telescope, and all the equipment that you can extend in an accelerated state. That is in metaphysics. That is all physics. You might well call it paraphysics. Para means beyond physics. But it's all physics, or superphysics. There is no supernatural. small city. Glorious city, see. At different degrees of speed or acceleration. Is that some question or something?
Yes. Technique is to slow the mind down to see what it is. How much do you slow it down? Do you have to slow it down all the way to the point where it almost stops really seeing what it is?
Slowing the brain down, you do it every day without having to interfere in it. Don't you fall asleep at night?
When I fall asleep, my mind is at such a low level that I don't know what it is. And I'm wondering what level are you?
Well, all right,
and when
you fall asleep, do you have a dream?
Oh, yeah.
And then what is a dream?
Well, I understand it's a lower state of consciousness.
Who said it's a lower state of consciousness?
Psychology.
Oh man, that's a very strong semantics for describing another vibratory rate of your brain. There is no low rate of breathing, it's not a low rate. It's a vibratory rate in which your awareness is functioning.
No, I didn't say it was a lower rate. I said it was a lower state.
It's not a lower state. A lower state or a higher state. It is a state of your consciousness that is very natural to you, and you move in it and have your being, just as much as you move and have your being in this state.
Okay, what rate? Can you tell me what rate of consciousness is ideal?
What rate of consciousness is ideal?
Absolutely no knowledge of its existence. But he
and that is.
Does it matter what we choose to do with the body after the soul transcends?
You are soul, and the way you're going to transcend your body, the body is already infinitely locked up in the soul. So him that overcome it, I will not send forth a second time, but I will make him a pillar in the house of the Lord. Overcome what? What do we have to overcome? We have to overcome death so we don't repeat it a second time. And to overcome it, we have to master this chemical body. So that the soul nature of the chemical body takes over for the first time and transmutes it into a form that there is no decomposition anymore in it, or non-corruptibility. Would be a realization now. When this body has thrown off corruption, that means decomposition, when this body is capable of throwing it off or shedding it by biological processes of correct thinking, then this body will be in a state of non-corruptibility, which is a glory unto its creator. We are created by the creator in order to exemplify the creator. But we don't know that until we go to the body and look at it first. We've been programmed that this body is a dirty little object. We've been programmed that everything we do tends to deprive it of its true nature. But it's because of the wrong programming we get the wrong results. But when we get to the right programming, you find the results are perfect. That man is soul. And as long as he's soul, he's got to realize it. But how will he realize it? Only by transmuting the body in which this mechanism is designed to function with. You have to take this very simple thing that you can sleep and put to bed and do all the good business and transmit it. And in the transmutation, it will go back to its true nature. So you start out with thinking first, then speaking second, then action. Thought, word, deed. These are the simple rules of transforming this mechanism. What you think, what you say, and what you mechanically put into it. Those three things make you alive. What you think of another person, or around your environment, of yourself, what you say of your environment, or yourself, and what you put into it, or you put into the other person, in the form of an action or communication, that you have to be responsible for. Yet those very three things will bring out the best in this mechanism.
Until we accomplish that point, if we don't reach that level,
argued in his own mind, why should I? divine principle takes away this type of experience, I don't have to die for people like that. Why should I die like this for them? Why should I put subject my life to these people? But if he is truly a master, if he truly realizes the principle, that it's not for him to say how he should die, then he has to accept the divine law. Not my will, not my craving, not my desire, not my ego, but thy will. This cosmic law inherent in matter that must elevate itself by the right action or behavior, that law must be adhered to, that law must be satisfied. Thy will be done. So he had to surrender to death, and it didn't matter if they cremated him or buried him or what, as long as he surrendered to it or accepted it. When he did, it was God, the divine principle within the very mechanism that is locked up, and the potential that came out and transmuted that mechanism to prove to those who were following the truth that they would not be let down if they accept the truth at that type of a standard or law. Now, if we water down the law and try to find it less than that, we will fool ourselves. But if we accept the law as it is and don't fight it and try to go through it with a devotional attitude, then it is that divine principle that elevates us. Otherwise, we have nothing. We're just killing ourselves. We can go out and kill everybody. We can go out and rob and be happy. But it's because these laws are there and they have been lived by other men and they challenge our true nature, which is the soul's nature, not the mind nature. The mind nature is to say, remove it, I want to cut out. The soul nature is, oh, give me strength that I can go through it. That's all I'm asking. I don't ask you for what's going to happen. I don't ask for the reward. I don't want to know what the reward is. I don't want to just get an Oscar. I just want to have the strength to go through it. That's the soul's way. The mind's way is to say, no, I don't want to go through it. Or tell me what I'm going to get if I go through it. That's the mind's way. The mind wants to find out what it's going to get. It wants to know if I go through, I'm going to get something. Yes.
What does this mean, resurrection or Easter or
death? Simple. Mastery of life over death by transforming the physical cells into a non-decaying body by the power of the will and devotion to the divine principle of life. You must make the effort to give all your love to the Lord. With all your mind, not part of your mind, all of your mind, objective, subjective, superconscious. With all of your heart, that means this pulsation of the blood through the organs pumping that decarbonizes the blood. With all of your strength, that is your breath, every inhalation must be dedicated to that divine law. And your soul, that means you are willing to go through the experience without questioning the results of the experience. Then you can have the elevation or the resurrection that is mentioned in the scripture. Now, a caterpillar is a worm that doesn't question the outcome of its life, but it eats its way like every other individual worm does, and one day it spins its own cocoon. That means it knows the art of how to die. And in the process of going through that, it emerges a different creature, not a rotten caterpillar. He comes out calling himself butterfly, and he can fly. That means he's got liberty now for the first time to go into the vast universe. And he's the most beautiful creature that can fly, because there is no creature designed by nature that can fly more beautiful than a butterfly. And you don't see rotten butterflies either. They either crumble to powder by the nature with which they were constructed. They don't rot and smell of the place. This is the law of resurrection left in nature to remind us that we are, in essence, that principle, but we have to earn it by behavior, not by the divine probing or somebody pushing us and nurse-meaning us. We are given the right to do this thing. So go back to the source, not to be nurtured into it. We are given this right. We can delay the time, we can speed up the time, that's all within our right. When we decide to do it, whenever we decide to go ahead and do it, it's still ours. if this prolonged or invaded steroid, surely we have that choice. We're given that. That's our choice. So invade or prolong it. But eventually you'll come back to it. There's no way we can avoid it. We come back to it.
What is cellular nutrition?
Cellular nutrition? In a simple statement, it is way to nourish the body by the way things grow. In the morning, we must eat 3 meals a day, breakfast, lunch, and supper. So in the morning, you wake up, the way things grow, fruits and nuts are on the trees. They get the first rays of the sun indirectly. Because man lives off of light. Man's body is light. Matter is light. The food you eat is an indirect form of light. That is, saliva breaks down to form light. To give you energy, which you kill yourself if you think you have, to get from eating food. You got all the energy in the world inside of you, but you can't use it because you think wrong. And you try to get it by gobbling down a lot of food. Then you kid yourself and say, oh, this vitamin will give me more energy, this one, this one. It don't give you more energy. There are people who don't eat that have energy. Versus people who eat that have no energy. And versus people who eat and feel that have energy. Solar nutrition, the word solar means from the sunlight itself. And it draws the body to nourish itself by the light. Now, if you, in the middle of the day, you must eat your lunch. So if you want to eat food, everything that goes above the ground. Not on a tree now, above the ground. And if you want to eat your meat, you're entitled to four-legged creatures and two-legged mammals. Nighttime, you eat everything that grows under the ground. And if you want to eat your meat, you're entitled to eggs or fish. That's all there is to it. Simple, practical, but scientifically deep proven every day in your lab. You can't make a mistake with it. It is too simple, too rational for anything to go wrong. That's how simple it is. The way things grow. You don't eat a potato in the morning because it goes under the ground. And you don't eat an apple at night because it goes on a tree. You don't eat a peanut in the morning because it goes under the ground. You don't eat an almond at night because it grows on a tree. The way the thing grows. Now, if the creative intelligence didn't decide the way the thing grows, he couldn't make you. He made you laugh. He made me laugh. We were the last thing he made, man. He made it the environment for man to live in. And the way he made it the environment, he started out with light, which is atomic energy. Then that light crystallized and became minerals. Then it became vegetation. Then it became cell life, animals. Then it became man. So man looks at his environment and learns that he has to eat. If he has to eat, there are two things he can do, wrong or right eating. Wrong eating will be restricted. Right eating will keep him healthy. Right eating will carry him back to where he came from, the source of his being, life. Wrong eating will give him illness and he will go through decomposition. This is another form of life, to learn the experience of that kind of life, to start all over again. Ask your question,
yeah. In terms of the image that you've created about the consciousness in the body, I would like you to explain the story that happens in the Bible when the adulteress is brought to Christ. The Pharisees, I believe, bring the adulteress to him. And he says that he without sin cast the first stone. Would you explain that to me?
Do you know of anybody who is without sin? Or wrong stone?
Because I don't know if I have sin.
Sin only means missing the mark. It's the archery term for missing the mark. It's the Hebrew archery term for missing the mark. That's where it came from. Yeah, go look up your Hebrew. It's a Hebrew word for meaning missing the mark. Now, if you're hitting the mark, you're on target all the time. Therefore, you're truthful all the time. If you're missing the mark, you're deviating. deliberating, you're a deviant. Who is the person that thinks 100% that you know of? Then you can find that person, then you find a sin. If you find a person with a deviant thinking, you find a sin. Somebody who is deviating, somebody who is missing the mark, somebody who is straying away from the focus. So that's why he puts his sentence to them. He who is without sin, he who deviates, he who makes these statements and don't live up to them, they are deviants in their own thinking. Let them cast the first stone. Let the man who, that's among them there, who made a pledge in his own thought process and failed in that thought process, if that man is so good, let him take the stone and knock on the woman. He didn't make the woman's life. He didn't make the woman's body. He didn't make his own body. So his thought, his own conscience, would be his own guide. Now, if you know from the day you born till now that you have never done anything but follow the truth that you were told to do, simply you follow the instructions, then I'll say you're a very truthful man. But if you deviated once, you can't say you're a truthful man. There are big signs today in big companies. When everything else fails, that means when everything you think you know and try, follow the instructions. You ever see that sign? That means because instructions were put down for us to follow to prevent us from deviating. Instructions are truthful statements about a particular function. Life is a process of how to go from the cell life back to life in a non-decomposing state. And if you follow the instructions to get back into that state without deviating from it, you are following truth. That's why it's called satsang. This conversation here is satsang. The process of getting back to the source.
But the sins of the parents and visit upon children.
The deviation is the mold. If you take a mold and you have liquid gold, and the mold that you want to pour the gold in comes out from the other mold that made that mold, and that other mold has a crack in it or a scratch, wouldn't the second mold have the same thing? And the third mold would have the same thing? So the same thing? After a while, what would happen to the fourth mole or fifth mole? That scratch will wear off because it's constantly rubbing itself out. You wouldn't want to repeat it. Who would want to make four or five cracked objects pouring in the substances you can see they're all cracked and scratched? You quit them. So it says after the fourth attempt or the fourth repetition, nobody wants to go beyond that. This is the common action. You start to make things and after the fourth time you give up, you want to start a new mold. So when he says, I visit the sins once of his father, or the spirit of the third and fourth generation, it means that the mold, the thought processes, the shock and the pattern of the parents during the pregnancy state, that's the mold, that's the sin, those are the deviant thinking that sets the pattern for the child when the child can be born.
Maybe the poor child. Pity the poor child.
No, you can't pity the poor child. How can you pity the poor gold that you're going to pour into the mold? Do you pity the gold? The gold is a little process. It's pure in itself, it's essence. The mold is something that has been there to throw because you want to make a form. So we can't pity the gold. We can't pity the child that has been born. There's no pity. Pity is only illusion. What is important is the child who comes into that mold doesn't reject the mold and bring forward its divinity to rise above the mold, then that child is a true expression of God. This is not my kingdom. This is not my mold. I go on to the Father. That means I rise above this mold. And if it were not so, I would tell you, if you can't rise above this mold, I wouldn't be wasting my time to talk to you. But because you can rise above the mold... Because you can rise above the mold,
no, it doesn't matter.
Went down.
Then,
went down
the teacher says, I go to prepare a place for you, meaning that there is a similar level of attitude for that mold that consciousness to exist in. If it were not so, I would tell you, I go to prepare, meaning I'm already making a better mold for you to come through. This mold that we are here is a mold that tends to produce attachment, illusion, anxiety, stress, desire. Well, we have to rise above this world. We can't negate it, we can't discard it, we can't run away from it. We may not like it. We may not want to admit it to ourselves, but we are stuck with it until we rise above it. So as soon as we rise above it, the game is over.
There's so much unhappiness from what people think is dealing with desire by suppressing their desire. I mean, it does not. If a person is suppressing his desire for the sensations of his own body, or for the prestige of a beautiful woman, or money, or wealth, if that is what he desires, and he represses that desire, he's as much sin, as much missing the mark, right? As someone who has no other concept, no other consciousness, just possession. We just have to, cannot say to a human being, right, I do not think, well, this is what is what you, how you should behave. People come to how they should behave by their own mistakes. There's no rule but the rule that you discover by yourself.
Well, who said there was any rule?
The laws that you said there was
the law is the mistake you make. That's the law. The mistake you make. There is no rule but the mistake. You made the mistake. Your conscience is already a built-in safety factor that will correct itself because it doesn't want to make that mistake again. And that conscience will start correcting itself. I can't correct you. I can't force you to correct yourself. You have to make your mistake. And that is the law. The law says the law is living. The law is life. And by the very law, you will correct yourself. Whenever you decide to correct it, it will correct. If you don't decide, you will have to pay the consequences. Not me, not him. You pay your own consequences. What you sow, you reap. You can't plant tomatoes and get corn. If you did it, the first time it's a miracle, but the second time it won't work because when you plant the corn, you can't get the tomato back. You may get the okra. Never got stuff. So once you plant corn, you get corn.
The corn is the only law.
What other law there is?
Right.
That's karma too. This is karma. You call it gravity. This is karma, you call it greed. Aerodynamics. The names don't change the truth.
Earthly Francis experience and what he's talking about is that when you get the experience of the biological transformation, where everything around you is pure and clean, and there is no more dirtiness in your mind as you see it, you can function in the world with its dirtiness. Saint Francis didn't see anything dirty no more. When he started, you couldn't tell him that because he was wearing his nice polished armor and he made sure his horse was being fed. Until he saw through the illusion of death and saw that everything was clean. Therefore, your Bible says, everything I made is clean. Even Peter made the statement when he was having a vision of food. He saw all kinds of creatures in front of him. And he said, Lord, these things are unclean. And you heard the divine presence say, everything I made is clean. How can you call it unclean? Is a cat unclean? The concept? Or a dog? The concept is not an unclean thing. It's we who see them in their uncleanness. It's our thinking that makes it unclean. But we have to rise above that. That is why we have to go and expose ourselves to all this dirtiness to discover that. We can recognize it, we can work it out by observing it. But it's there in ourselves. We have to write about it. So Francis was pointing out that his experience was so realistic and high that it made him not come down from that state no more.
In other words, it was a permanent transmutation of his physical self. It's not something that he was wishing for or hoping to happen on a hypnotic state. You know, people try to hypnotize themselves and produce a stigmata wound. As soon as the hypnotic state wears off, the wound disappears. A real stigmata wound impressed upon you by the Master Jesus, don't go no place, it's there for good till you die. That's the difference between a true stigmata wound and one trying to be induced by the mind. A lot of psychologists are trying to induce it on themselves. A lot of people try to induce the stigmata wound by praying to the idea of Jesus, and it appears on their body. But as soon as that state wears off, it goes away. But a general stigmata wound, when it comes into the body, don't go no place, because the evidence of physics and science proves it can't go. But it defies everything that physics knows. In the first place, you never see the stigmata wound in the palm of your hand either. They're general ones. They're in the wrist. That's the difference. You find most people pray and they think, because they see some artist paint Jesus dying and nailed at the cross, so they think of it here. But when this appears on the human body, it's not there wishing for it or trying to imitate Jesus, then that actually imposes itself or superimposes itself or stamps on the body. That is in the wrist. And it's only Master Jesus would do that to mark a particular principle that has been violated in this world. The early popes were all disciples of Jesus, and every pope who was the guru of his disciples, Peter was the next guru after Jesus, he was impressed with the wound before he died. And the next disciple that took over as the next guru, he was impressed, and they were all called popes or leaders, until he comes to Pope Irene. And they would know who would be the pope all the time, because it would be all in that one person. When that person died, or the previous person died, the next one in line will have it. And the church built itself, still became the Pope Irene. The Pope Irene was a political pope. He was put in there by the Medici, or Medici, and formed the new Vatican, which we got today. Now, he did not have this stigmata wound. What happened? Simply this, the stigmata wound came back later. At that time there was no pope, no genuine pope from the lineage of spirituality. We had a pope from mentality. But from the lineage of spirituality, God is not marked. He picks the worst individual, the most ignorant individual, the pauper individual, in the most remote region to put the stigmata wound. Only in the Catholic tradition. You will not find that in any other Christian group outside of the Catholic tradition that will be impressed with the stigmata wound. We have a lot of Christian mystics in the Presbyterian Church or in the Baptist Church, there's a lot of them. But only in the Catholic tradition you will find a mystic that will carry those wounds impressed by Jesus himself. They are to refute the violation of guruship, the assumption of guruship taken away from the truth down to the present day and setting up a false type of a pope. I'm not condemning the pope. Because it went through that process. They wanted to set up a political process. They did not understand. They didn't understand that law. But it went through a devious action. Today, when you find the stigmatist, in the true sense of the word, wherever he is, you will always find you're a very unlettered person. It's Jesus' way of laughing at us. And you will find him in a very poverty-stricken area, in a very remote region of the world. But there he would be, and he will be performing the works of the Master. Raising the dead, healing the sick, and doing everything. And the Holy Spirit will be upon him. Now there are a lot of people who can perform a lot of miracles. But you will never find them with the stigmata wound. They are all performing in the name of the Holy Spirit. Just like the disciples were in the day of Pentecost. But not all of the 12 disciples had the stigmata wound put upon them. As lineage of that truth. Now, when you find a stigmatist with it on their body, you know that person has the inner light open to them.
and yet undermine his own. So course towards the accomplishment. No, it's like you. But to be conscious of it, you know, strive for that insight, and yet undermine your own effort.
It is said in the scripture, if you seek the truth, you have to fight for it. Cry, C-R-Y. You know how much chemistry is involved to make a teardrop? Fantastic. Not until you can cry tears for actual truth of a thought, really answer out of the darkness of your soul. That's why they say the saints who go through the night of the soul are the ones who have cried the most. And when they cry, then God came to them to reveal that radiant image within themselves. A spiritual master will find you. A realizing soul will find you when you cry. If you just sit down and say, I want to know the truth, it's just a mental suggestion to yourself. When you get down on that floor and hit that floor, really cry. And if it only lasts for a day or two, don't stop. But you have to cry. You got to set those tears for that truth. And don't give up. Then one day, without any effort on your part, you'll have the experience right in your room to know the truth. The radiant form of the Lord will come to you. That's his promise, and you don't back up on his promises. You don't back out. He fulfills every promise, but you got to pay a price. You don't get something for nothing from him. He wants all of love from us. He wants to know deep down in our hearts, can we really love him with the fullness of our mind? Not part of the mind that thinks, oh, I love you because you're God, you can give me something and make you an important person. I love you because I got to be running out there to be in front of the public to make them think I'm important. Don't work that way. To really get the truth that you're looking for, that liberates you, you got to cry hard. It's a very tough price to pay, but that's all the price there is. It's not a price on books. You can have all the books in the world and read about it, but don't give you God. God realized people aren't found in books. They aren't found in libraries. You know where they're found? They're found in a simple way of living things, which is called the school of hard knocks. There you got to struggle through the emotional state with all the tensions and anxiety and cry out till it happens again. Sometimes you may go for days without eating, not even realize you're not eating. But it'll happen. Because that's what truth is. The truth that you're seeking is brought out from your soul simply by crying to it. Now you may be led to certain areas of truth. That is pacification truth. You may be led to somebody to give you some little insight into truth. That's to pacify you. But if you want all of the truth and nothing short of the truth, then cry. And when you cry, his radiant form, I use the word, his radiant form, will materialize to give you the truth. Like Saint Saxon, he didn't want to see anything short of God. Because to her, even Jesus was just another image of God. And she prayed and prayed and prayed and cried and cried, and finally the radiant form of God came. And she saw it, she said, no, give me my beloved Jesus. With him, I can have human contact, human consolation. But she had to find out for herself if God did exist, and what God's radiant form actually is. Because it's written, no man sees God and lives. Even Moses didn't see God. He had to step aside and let the shadow of God pass over him. This kind of experience you can have if you want it. Now, if you want the pacifying experience, that's why you say, don't ask for God as that type of exposure. Ask for God via His Son that reveals the Father. It's the Son who has absorbed the Father that makes the Father visible to you at a human level. So it's through those beings we feel that we love them, we adhere to them. Their instructions mean more to us than all the books on the subject. One living teacher telling you how to get down to yourself, and even to tell you, just sit down and don't do nothing and listen to yourself, that means the whole atmosphere is so the natural experience because it's going to work. You know why? This is possible for saying it. And he can't say it if he's not permission to say it. It is nothing to speak, it's the Father in him that speaks all the time. When he has realized the truth, when he has realized his oneness is good, he can tell you something for your soul that he will not be accountable for. All that is required is to watch and listen. You want to watch with your eyes open or eyes closed, all right. But more important is to listen. Because God is the cosmic word or sound of the universe. He is your being. He's inside of you. As music. And when I use the word as music, I literally mean it. I mean it as a sound off the right inside of your body. You have attended all the Brahms and the Beethoven and the Bach, and I listen to something that superseded it all. Just of entertaining and even music. But inside his body. You really want to hear the music? You really can't got their music from their music. Bach and all these things got their ideas, they have to listen inside themselves. God is that music that you heard. It's called the Holy Comforter. In the world of vibration and distraction and desire, this divine music helps you to rise above it by listening to it. It entertains you all the time. You can return it with any time you want. Free. You don't have to pay no money to it. It's there all the time because it's me. But you have to listen to it. That's the price that you require. You have to learn to listen. It's above my voice. It's above the sound of the automobile. It's above the sound of the room. It's in the supersonic range, ultrasonic range. Now, as Jesus said, unless you become the sky, you can't come to the kingdom of heaven. The kingdom of heaven is within you as a reservoir of joy. And if you can remember, when you were a child, some moment in your life when you were happy, some moment when you were a child and you were happy, and your body felt very happy. As soon as you can recall it, you can enter the whole complete source of the joy in you. Go right back to your soul. Your whole body will be laughing. Nobody starts feeling that guilty. The mind will start becoming clear and the memory starts to increase. Something you know when you were a boy or a girl, when you were a little boy or a girl, made you very happy. That is also meant. Come on to me, all you have here and every day I will bless you. The five senses, they work, searching for truth, searching for answers. They get clogged up with stress. That's what you turn in, and you live a simple childhood experience. It's very joyful, very euphoric and grateful. you can be healed in simplicity. Whatever is bothering you can be resolved by doing after more of the plan. Nobody can take it away from you either. It's your personal experience in which you have access to the other. It takes 42 muscles to make a sound. Only it takes 2 muscles to make a smile. And if you can't smile, then let us take 2 toothpicks and stop all the time. The pain that is started in the sad state, God is life and life. God is joy in your heart. It's the nobility of your heart that you're looking for. The integrity of it. Once you have discovered that, nobody can take it.